This is Radio Equal Shock with your host, Alex Smith.
The world's largest oil company knew climate change would result from their products as early as the 1970s. That's just part of startling revelations coming out of an investigation by Inside Climate News. To get the whole scoop, we've reached their senior investigative journalist, Neela Banerjee. Neela, a warm welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you for having me.
How did you and your team get started on this massive story about Exxon?
It started as a broader project looking into early climate change research. And as we started to do this, a scientist we spoke to who had worked for the U.S. Energy Department noted that Exxon had contributed to this research and to peer-reviewed journals. And we thought that was unusual given the known history of Exxon's involvement in climate, starting from about 1990 on, when it worked hard to delay action on climate change. So Exxon got on our radar that way, and then we tried to see if other companies were involved. We didn't hear any mention of any other companies. Then what happened was that, separate from this, I got a transcript of a congressional hearing, a U.S. congressional hearing in 1979, which is much earlier than we thought there'd been hearings on climate change. And just on a lark, it was a PDF document, I decided to look up Exxon. And sure enough, there was a gentleman from Exxon at this 1979 hearing. So the peer-reviewed work had been about 1983, 1984, which to us already seemed quite early. All of a sudden, seeing this man's name, it was Henry Shaw, in that transcript moved the clock back to 1979. So I started to look into, who is Henry Shaw? And started to Google him and discover that he was an author of a paper that was done describing a project launched in 1979 by Exxon using one of its supertankers to take samples of CO2 in the oceans as the tanker went from the Gulf of Mexico to the Persian Gulf. So, you know, that became the thread we started to pull on. Henry Shaw is dead, but one of his co-authors, Ed Garvey, is alive. We spoke to him, and we hopscotch from person to person. We discovered archives, and, you know, through just old-fashioned shoe leather and phone calls, we managed to pull this together.
And, you know, the irony is a bunch of bloggers and denialists, some of them likely receiving funding from Exxon, kept pushing the myth that climate scientists in the 1970s only warned about the coming ice age and not global warming. Doesn't this blow that myth right out of the water?
Yeah, I mean, it is a really interesting point. You know, nobody has mentioned that whole canard until now. And you're right, you know, people to this day continue to mock climate science because they say, well, you know, scientists said this back in the 70s and now they're saying that. Well, I actually don't think scientists said it, or maybe it was one scientist and Newsweek covered it, but it's more that Exxon was following the science of the time, or Exxon scientists were following it, and they reported it back to their top executives. In the first story of our series, we have a scene that we got from the documents of one of Exxon's senior scientists, a man named Jim Black, reporting to Exxon's management committee in 1977 about the emerging science around CO2 emissions and climate change. And he said, you know, the prevailing scientific opinion is that these CO2 emissions come from burning fossil fuels. And in about a decade, it's going to be time to make some hard choices about energy use. He didn't say it in any kind of biased or critical fashion, I mean, other than, you know, scientific skepticism and inquiry. He just laid it out there. It was very neutral. It's what you would expect a scientist in academia to say. And that was the tone from the outset until about 1986, because that's, you know, we have documents for now.
So where did you find all those internal Exxon reports and correspondence from the early days of their climate research?
From various sources, from a lot of archives, you know, went to a lot of different places and found them and digitized them, and we're sharing them, you know, as the stories come out. There's a lot, you know, there's thousands of pages, but and while it completes a picture, the most telling documents, I would say, are maybe, you know, two dozen.
And how far did Exxon go with its early climate research? Can you tell us more?
Oh, sure. So the first project that they launched was in 1979, was this tanker project that I mentioned earlier. And it was ambitious when you think about it. It didn't cost a lot of money as far as, you know, a company the size of Exxon goes. But it meant a lot of coordination among various Exxon divisions, and that's kind of a big deal, according to one of the scientists on the project. And for that kind of coordination to go on, it needed sign-off at the very top levels of the company. So they deployed this tanker. I mean, the tanker was going anyway, taking oil and so on, but they outfitted it with specially made equipment, and they seconded, you know, several men to the project, technicians and engineers and scientists. So they did that from 1979 to about 1982. Starting around 1980, Exxon decided that they needed to know more about climate modeling. Climate modeling at that time was primitive. You know, any scientist could have told you. And Exxon was following it, but they decided to hire mathematicians and atmospheric scientists and others, I guess, to but definitely mathematicians, to do mathematical modeling of the Earth's climate and how it would be affected by greater CO2 emissions. And there was an overlap between the tanker project and the modeling. By 1982, the price of oil had fallen precipitously. Exxon was making cuts everywhere. The tanker project seemed expensive, and so they decided to cut that. We don't see any other consideration. It didn't seem like that cut came out of denial or anything like that. But they decided to continue with their modeling efforts, and those modeling efforts continued and generated peer-reviewed papers, some of which were praised by, you know, academics and government scientists. All of that continued until about 1986. Then the layoffs that were happening at Exxon led to a sharp reduction at the research staff. And from 1986 to the present day, Exxon's continued to do climate research, but more narrowly focused, and certainly not anything that would imperil their business. Like, some of the research I've seen looks at whether natural gas is better than coal for the climate, but it doesn't really look at, you know, some of the bigger issues that they were looking at in the early 80s.
Do we know for sure that these scientists managed to warn top executives in the company about the dangerous risks of climate change in those early days?
Yes, we do. We have documents that show that, and we've shared those documents on our website. So, for example, that first meeting I was telling you about that this scientist named Jim Black gave before the management committee. The management committee is the top level of the company. It's the chairman and CEO and the senior vice presidents. They're the men, and they were all men, who made decisions about the company and its priorities. Later, we have documents that showed Exxon's managers and executives from their research and engineering unit, where all this climate research was going on, that they kept senior vice presidents apprised regularly about climate change. We have letters and from managers and kind of lower-level executives all the way to the upper ranks. And then we also have we even have documents that reflect the interest that those men took in climate science. So, for example, there's a memo written by a gentleman from Exxon Research and Engineering called Harold Weinberg, and he writes about a senior vice president pointedly discussing oceans and their role in climate change and the carbon cycle. I mean, they were versed about it, and they were talking to their scientists and challenging them and kicking around different theories. So that was one of the most exciting things in our research, was that the documents we found showed that interest in climate change and climate research went all the way up to the executive suites. And therefore, Exxon couldn't say to us, oh, well, yeah, of course, you know, these scientists, they're off doing their own research, and it's, you know, it really doesn't mean anything. It's distant from our bigger corporate considerations. And what we saw was that, you know, they weren't.
Well, I want to get back to how important that is about the role of the executives in just a couple of minutes. But first, I'd like to ask, what does ExxonMobil say about that early research now?
So ExxonMobil has taken a rather interesting position. They own up to it. They said, of course, we did that research, and we've continued to do research for 40 years. And they basically, what they take issue with is our description of the different direction they start to go in 1989, when they joined a U.S.-based coalition called the Global Climate Coalition that worked very hard to delay action on cutting fossil fuel emissions. And that's when here in the U.S. we see this political muscle coming from big business to stop action on climate change, 1989 and onward. And Exxon spent millions and millions of dollars on that denial effort. When we went to Exxon and we said and asked them questions about their research, they didn't deny that the research went on in the 70s, but what they denied was that they actually ever cast doubt on climate change. Or, you know, they make it seem that their response to what they did in the 90s onward, when their chairman, Lee Raymond, was deriding climate modeling, for example, their response to that is, well, our positions have always been in the mainstream of science. And, my question is, well, who determines what that mainstream is? I mean, do you determine it? Because everybody else thinks, you know, has described you as a denier. So it's been a very interesting discussion with Exxon, because they own up to the research, but they deny that they ever denied or muddied climate change or perceptions of climate research. And when we've pushed them for greater detail and more detailed responses, they just took their marbles and went home. They are not taking our questions anymore.
Wow. The Global Climate Coalition, it sounds like an activist group, but
in
an Orwellian twist, it's the opposite. Well, okay, folks, you're listening to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith, talking with Neela Banerjee of Inside Climate News. So your project was taken up by the American public broadcasting show Frontline. They're doing a feature on your research. Can you tell us about that, please?
Well, so far it's been rather limited to this series and to that first story. What we might do further with Frontline is still under discussion. So I can't really tell you more than what we've done so far. But they're the ones who definitely secured that footage of Exxon's tanker and the scientists on the tanker and so on. That footage is actually available from the University of Texas archives, the library where the Exxon archives are. And those archives are pretty sanitized. It's basically Exxon's public statements, but that footage is there nonetheless.
All right, so it's my understanding that the oil and coal companies learned from the tobacco company campaigns to sow doubt about the science. For tobacco, it was between smoking and cancer. Is that the way you see it?
That kind of connection is something that politicians and especially lawyers can, I'll leave it to them to determine that. But what we do see is one place where I think the comparison falls apart between, say, what Exxon was doing, what the tobacco industry did, is that from what I understand, the tobacco industry, you know, the companies got the research results from their scientists, their in-house scientists, and then suppressed them. Exxon did not suppress any of this science. In fact, they publicized it, and they, as I said, they published in peer-reviewed journals. They sponsored symposia on climate change back in the early 80s. They funded research at Columbia and at Woods Hole in Massachusetts, you know, sort of premier laboratories. And so, you know, they understood that climate change and the regulatory response to it could be a risk to their business. The reason that they did their research and then publicized it is because they wanted to be taken seriously when those discussions about curtailing fossil fuel emissions would begin. And they thought, you know, the best way to protect their business was to be a constructive player in the science and in the discussion. Now, that's a very different approach to climate change and the threat that it poses to fossil fuel companies than Exxon took starting in 1989 with the Global Climate Coalition and so on.
So ExxonMobil says they've stopped funding climate denialists. When did that happen, and do you believe them?
So far, we don't see any reason not to believe them. I think it happened about 5 years ago.
And are Exxon executives still sowing doubt about the link between fossil fuels and climate change?
They don't really comment on it. We asked their public relations representative, you know, does Exxon accept that fossil fuel emissions are driving climate change? And they don't really comment on it.
I think there was one statement by, was it Tillerson, just recently on that?
They don't actually comment on the link between fossil fuel emissions and climate change. They do say that, you know, increased CO2 is driving climate change and so on. The difference is that Rex Tillerson, the chairman, while accepting climate change, believes that human society is infinitely adaptable and that this can be solved not through a reduction in fossil fuel combustion, but by some kind of engineering solution. He sees it as an engineering problem and not as a problem of fuel choice. And when he was asked at their shareholder meeting this year by one of their shareholders, you know, whether Exxon shouldn't invest more in renewable energy, his response was that Exxon does not lose money on purpose, meaning that, you know, he just brushed aside any notion of Exxon having a greater focus on renewable energy. And that comment drew a lot of laughs from his allies there.
Yep, we're going to stay in the oil business until we're driven out of it. That seems to be their position. Well, I asked you about what executives knew and when, because just in the news, a peanut company CEO was sentenced to 28 years in jail for knowingly selling tainted peanut butter, and about a dozen people died and many more people got sick. But when we compare that to maybe 100,000 people killed in climate-fueled heat waves already, more from the spread of tropical diseases, crop failures, floods, forest fires, maybe it won't be too long before oil company executives are hauled before the courts, charged with some sort of climate crimes. What's your opinion on that?
You know, I don't know what the response is going to be. And, you know, and I'll leave it to juries and judges to determine whether that's good or bad. I mean, what, you know, that's not my role as a journalist. You know, if I were a columnist, it would be something different. But I do think that people, you know, we've gotten indications that members of Congress are watching this closely. Now, the Congress is controlled by the Republican Party, and you know, then the Republican Party in the U.S. considers it basically an article of faith to either deny climate change or actually it's softened that recently, and they just basically don't want to take any action on climate change. So while the Republicans control the U.S. Congress, nothing will probably happen as far as congressional hearings and so on, akin to, say, the hearings that happened with the tobacco industry decades ago. But if that were to change in 2016 with the elections, then, you know, you might have congressional hearings. If there are attorneys general on the state level that are looking into this and see some way of addressing this through litigation, that might happen. Maybe the Justice Department will take a look at this. We don't really know. We don't, you know, especially entities, institutions like the Justice Department, government lawyers do not talk to us, so we don't have any insights into what they might do.
All right, well, let's just talk about the giant opportunity lost when Exxon decided to fund climate denial instead of following up on their early research role. I wonder, what could they have done instead?
Perhaps we should start with what they did. What they did starting in 1989 was not just join this global climate coalition, but over 25 years, they funded as climate denier organizations. And what the think tanks they funded do is that they create an artificial narrative, not based on science, that says that you know, that the science is too murky, it's too uncertain, and that the changes to the economy are too expensive, so we shouldn't take action. And these institutions look reputable. They've gotten all this money from Exxon and other climate deniers. And so then Exxon can point to these institutions, which they started, and say, see, you know, this reputable institution says that we shouldn't take action. You know, Exxon's allies in Congress or even in the White House can also point to the studies that these various front groups do. And so, you know, what you have is an enormous infrastructure that Exxon funded that generates fodder for their arguments and that creates doubt. And that has helped enormously to delay action in the United States on climate change and to muddy public perceptions of what's really happening and what scientists really think. So if Exxon had not taken that position, if Exxon had continued to do research, even if it had remained neutral, I think that machinery of doubt would be less powerful than it is now. And there might have been a greater push to get something done. If Exxon had actually followed the science and said, you know, we are going to gradually shift away from fossil fuels and focus more on alternative energy, then, you know, we might actually be looking at an entirely different landscape in the United States, and there might be a carbon tax now or cap and trade or greater use of alternative energy, including in the transportation sector. And that would have really changed the game. We won't know, will we? Because it didn't happen.
So this is part of a series you're doing. What's coming up next?
What's coming up next is, well, so today we ran a story about modeling, Exxon's internal climate modeling, and how that confirmed the scientific consensus, and they actually use words like consensus, words that they derided a decade later in the 90s. Coming up next week, hopefully next week, is a story about how Exxon's understanding, their corporate understanding of the risks that CO2 posed to the environment, how that understanding shaped certain business decisions that they made in the 80s. So not, you know, in the 90s or even now, but 35 years ago.
For anyone who doesn't know, Neela, what is Inside Climate News and where do people find you?
So Inside Climate News is a nonprofit, very small nonprofit investigative news site focusing on climate change issues. We won the Pulitzer Prize 2 years ago for a series about a pipeline leak, and we are funded by American foundations, and we can be found at insideclimatenews.org.
Insideclimatenews.org, that's pretty easy, and I think people will go and visit you there for sure. Our guest, Neela Banerjee, is a senior investigative journalist with Inside Climate News. They're bringing out a startling new series on early climate research by the oil company Exxon. What they knew and when. Get it all at insideclimatenews.org, and you can find links to some YouTube interviews with former Exxon scientists in my own show blog at ecoshock.info. Neela, thanks so much for your great work and for talking with us on Radio EcoShock.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Alex Smith reporting.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.